A reading from the book of Genesis. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, bore him no children. She had an Egyptian slave girl whose name was Hagar, and Sarai said to Abram, "You see that the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go in to my slave girl. It may be that I shall obtain children by her." And Abram listened to the voice of Sarai. So, after Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar the Egyptian, her slave girl, and gave her to her husband Abram as a wife. He went in to Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt on her mistress. Then Sarai said to Abram, "May the wrong done to me be on you. I gave my slave girl to your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, she looked on me with contempt. May the Lord judge between you and me." But Abram said to Sarai, "Your slave girl is in your power. Do to her as you please." Sarai dealt harshly with Hagar, and she ran away from her. The angel of the Lord found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, the spring on the way to Shur. And the angel said, "Hagar, slave girl of Sarai, where have you come from, and where are you going?" She said, "I am running away from my mistress, Sarai." The angel of the Lord said to her, "Return to your mistress and submit to her." The angel of the Lord also said to her, "I will so greatly multiply your offspring that they cannot be counted for multitude." And the angel of the Lord said to her, "Now you have conceived, and you shall bear a son. You shall call him Ishmael, for the Lord has given heed to your affliction. He shall be a wild ass of a man, with his hand against everyone, and everyone's hand against him. And he shall live at odds with all his kin." Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram named his son, whom Hagar bore, Ishmael. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore him Ishmael. The word of the Lord. And from the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus said to his disciples, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father in heaven. On that day, many will say to me, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and cast out demons in your name, and do many deeds of power in your name?' Then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Go away from me, you evildoers.'" The Gospel of the Lord. Recently, a theatrical musical production in Manhattan entitled The Cave featured several groups of people responding to the same sets of questions. One of the questions asked, "Who is Hagar to you?" Among the respondents, Jesuit Dan Berrigan offered this thought: "Hagar to me is my mother. You see, my mother was a German-American girl who, in the early 20th century, married into an Irish Catholic family. My mother, like Hagar, was always an outsider." Who is Hagar? Genesis sketches a picture of an Egyptian slave girl. She had no social status. Others owned her, regarding her as no more than an object, a possession. Listen to the verbs. Sarai took her and gave her. Then Abram used her and gave Sarai permission to do to her as you please. So Sarai abused her. True. Hagar, finding herself able to bear a child and comparing herself with her barren mistress, developed what we'd call these days an attitude. So, suffering Sarai's abuse, she ran away. A pregnant, runaway, slave girl. Four strikes against her. She finds herself in the wilderness, and so did God. There, alone and vulnerable, she hears the voice asking, "Where are you from? Where are you going?" Genesis offers her simple geographical response. But perhaps those questions burrowed deeper into her soul. Perhaps those questions directed her to her true human dignity, beyond her pitiable status as a pregnant, runaway slave girl. Soon, she hears a remarkable declaration, truly an annunciation, the first in the Hebrew Bible. "You shall bear a son." Wow! Her dignity and her honor will grow. So in this spirit, she was able to return home, despite the lowly status of still being a slave. But there is more here. For some reason or other, those compiling the lectionary omitted verse 13. There, we hear an amazing detail. In gratitude for her vision and the annunciation, she praises God as the one who sees. And she reflects in wonder that she has really seen or encountered God and still remains alive. She experiences God's loving presence and she names it. Another biblical first for Hagar. So, who is Hagar? A lowly human, a flawed human, a foreigner, she was Egyptian, a person seen and loved by God, a person who recognizes God's seeing her in her pitiable condition, and God's having compassion for her. Well, this is nice. But why do we tell this story today in our faith communities all over the world? It happened so long ago. What good could it possibly bear for hearers today? Jesus answers our questions in the gospel. Hear his comment. Not everyone who looks the part is righteous, only those who do God's will and live out God's dream. Only those who see life from God's point of view. Others may look holy. Others may prattle on in prayer or ritually attend to the rites of worship with rigorous and rigid religiosity. But they're not necessarily the ones who see and hear God's favor. So our question continues. Who is Hagar today? Who is Hagar? Women of the poor communities whose work and wisdom keep hope alive for their children, their grandchildren, and their great-grandchildren. Women who bear the faith, who live in faith, and who pass that faith on in compassion and courage. Who is Hagar? the Muslim and Christian fathers who refuse to wreak vengeance on each other over the deaths of their children in that violence in the Middle East, choosing instead to grieve together and then work toward reconciliation within and between their communities. Hagar is the one who doesn't look the part of the hero, but whose vision includes another's good, not only her own. Today, we look for Hagar in our families, in our neighborhoods, our workplaces, our world. Perhaps we even look into a mirror and see Hagar looking back at us. Because in the midst of our littleness, our poverty, our powerlessness, our pain, we too encounter God, the one who sees. And that encounter empowers us to return to life, not relieved of our limits and our pain, but with courage, with hope, that the promise God makes to us will be fulfilled. We hear God say, "You, little one, will live with me forever."